Catholic Lecture Number 9, The Lord's Prayer. Today I will keep a promise I made to you some time ago, to give interpretation of or meditation on the Lord's Prayer. Once before I talked about the meaning of this prayer, but then I spoke in general terms. Tonight I want to shed a different light on it and to show you how you can find in this prayer everything that you need at any time, for everything is contained in it. It can also be applied very personally. All your problems can be solved with its help. Such a meditation can easily take a whole hour. Our Father. When you think of the meaning of these words, you presumably picture God as the Father of all beings. But as you say these words very intimately to yourself, try to meditate very specifically on how God's fatherhood applies also to those people you do not like or do not care for, towards whom you feel a certain resistance, or with whom you just happen to be in discord. It does not have to be always a feeling of hatred. It is enough to be irritated with somebody. Go into your stillness and ponder that these people are also the children of God. Calling yourself a child of God is justified only when you allow that the people who create those unpleasant feelings in you are also God's children, just as you are. When you succeed in doing this, your attitude, and therefore your feelings too, will automatically undergo a subtle change. At that moment, you will become more relaxed and more free. Now, to do this may at first cause difficulties and resistance, because your feelings are not always willing to change. Whenever there are strong negative feelings of any kind, there has to be a tight inner knot somewhere. Take such a resistance as a signal that tells you how important it is to dissolve this inner knot. There must be something unresolved in you if you harbor such negative feelings, regardless of how wrong the other person may be. After this insight comes the will to straighten out whatever is wrong within you, and the readiness to accept new recognitions through inspiration or guidance in whatever way they are given. Then come the practical means you need to free yourself from this unresolved and negative state. They will also be given to you. Pray and put your will to it, and suddenly, as you meditate on the deep meaning of these words and how to apply them in your life, a heavy pressure will be lifted from your chest. You will feel as if you had been freed of a great burden. Try it also another way. Bypass everything that bothers you in this person and visualize him in his perfection. Try to recognize how and where the divine spark manifests through him or her. Here also, whoever seeks will find. You will discover qualities which clearly indicate that he also has a higher self, that he also is entitled to be regarded a child of God. It is so important to draw a line separating the higher and the lower self, to pinpoint what belongs to the higher and what belongs to the lower. This part is eternal, immortal, and is of God. That part is ephemeral, temporal, and not of true reality. And do not do this just with others. Start with yourself. For when you can distinguish the two in you, it will suddenly no longer be so difficult to love your neighbor. When you can do this for yourself, you will find it much easier to recognize someone you don't like as your brother or sister. You will then allow your higher self to unite with the higher self of your neighbor. Our Father contains all this. Who art in heaven? Heaven is within you, not outside. Seek it therefore in yourself. Look for and find your own perfection, which exists already, even though still covered up or veiled to some extent. And seek heaven, that is God, within the soul of your neighbor, even in someone you reject. For only thus can you find the eternal living God. Hallowed be thy name. This too can be meditated on in various ways. You hallow the name of the Father through your endeavor to fathom his laws and to fulfill them. Because for every modality of life there exists a respective spiritual law. When you are confused by the problems in your life, you have simply not found the appropriate spiritual law. so that when you say, "Hallowed be thy name," ask the question within, "Where are my difficulties? What are my problems?" And ask God for the answer. Ask Him to let you know what law you are violating, so that you can then really hallow His name. When you ask Him this, the personal connection, which you should all learn to establish, will come into effect. For when you look at your problems in truth, with honesty in your heart, from this viewpoint, I must be violating, even if only unconsciously, a spiritual law, but I will no longer do so, then you will also receive the answer. It might not come in the same moment, but life will bring you the answer. If you are alert and open to this way, God's name is hallowed. Thy kingdom come. Only when you hallow God's name in this way do you also bring God's kingdom close to you, for it is within you. You always think, if you give it a thought at all, that God's kingdom is somewhere outside, and that it should descend to you, to your earth from wherever it is, and that all you will have to do is go there where God's kingdom has manifested and enter. There are the usual vague ideas about the kingdom of God, but this is an error. You merely erect false thought forms in your imagination. God's kingdom must be created within you. And this can happen only when you go through the schooling successfully, by learning to know and to apply the spiritual laws. Thy will be done. I do not need to say much about this, since I have done so many times before, but I want to reemphasize how difficult it is for most people to apply this saying on the personal level. You claim that you do not know what God's will is, and that you would do it if only you knew what it was. I have said to you that whoever strives to make contact with God's world in order to find out what God's will is, and then to fulfill it unconditionally, even while he is still insecure, will receive the answer. And rather than trying to rack your brains about issues in which you feel insecure, turn to those where you don't require an answer, for it is obvious once you begin to think about it. Thus, everybody can be quite sure that it must be God's will to follow this path of perfection, in whatever way it offers itself to you. You can be quite sure that it must be God's will that you face yourself in honesty instead of choosing the more comfortable way of pushing away everything that creates uneasiness, or always blaming others and circumstances. Such blaming makes it superfluous to seek the wrong within you. Contemplate what causes your inner resistance, and you can be sure that when you feel disharmonious, you have somewhere violated a divine law, because no wrongdoing or error of another human being can give you such disharmonious feelings if there is not also something amiss in you. Your answer must be that you have in some way failed to fulfill God's will. In one case, your future might be connected with general questions of a religious nature, with probably also a personal connotation. In another, it might be a strictly personal matter. But whenever there is a feeling of anger, of resistance, of fear, of any disharmony, you have a clue that something in you is not quite in order. For otherwise, there could not be so much darkness in some of your life situations. Even if it takes long to find out, if you strive for the answer wholeheartedly, you must get it sooner or later. When you pray for the answer in order to fulfill God's will, it must come. Do not be afraid of it, for God's will is always wise and loving and leads to bliss, even though you have to struggle for it temporarily. Then ask yourself, am I truly willing to do God's will, even if I don't like it at first? I have given you a whole lecture about this, and you can use it in this connection. On earth as it is in heaven. What does this mean? What is heaven? What is earth? Would it not be strange if you human beings would say a prayer that God's will be done in heaven, which in some people's mind is somewhere outside? If heaven were outside, would it need your prayers that God's will be done there? Could you exercise such influence there? Certainly not. Of course you can, to a certain degree, do it on earth, in that you, through being on this path, by the influence and light you spread, work for God's kingdom in your fellow human beings. However, heaven is, as I said, within you. It is your spirit in its perfection. which waits for the walls of the lower self to be broken through. God in you shall manifest in your spiritual life as in every detail of your earthly life. To what extent is this already a reality in your life? In what respect does God not yet penetrate your being, your actions, and your feelings? Try, for instance, to imagine, if you were told to relinquish something to which you cling, believing it to be God's will, it could be just an opinion. Would you be willing to let it go and consider that it may not be so? Or would you rather convince yourself of the contrary, just because you want it that way? Try to pinpoint in which area of your life do you have this kind of an attitude. Then face yourself in honesty. What is more important for you, the truth or a conviction you have clung to for one reason or another? Do you believe that God will show you what is right? But first there must be a willingness to let go. Whenever you feel a tight rigidity, even if your opinion is right, you prevent the heavenly kingdom to manifest within you. But in the area in which you are in error, the truth cannot penetrate you in that respect, because thought forms are false. Then again, God's kingdom cannot come to you. Give us today our daily bread. This too is often mechanically repeated without visualizing anything. Man assumes, even if he does not clearly formulate the thought, that earning his daily bread has nothing to do with God. But truly I say to you, my dear ones, you cannot do anything good that is not blessed by God. Without God, nothing will succeed, no matter how hard you try again and again. A person who has had some spiritual schooling can discern very accurately, when he thinks back on his life, what in it had God's blessing and what did not. How does the difference feel? What went wrong so often? In what area do I have always the same trouble? What is the true reason for it? What did I do wrong? In what respect do I have a wrong attitude? Think about this and then surrender yourself to God entirely also in this respect. Be ready to let yourself be guided to obtain both your earthly and your spiritual bread. The spiritual bread is so neglected. You believe it is less important than the material bread. No, my dear ones, the spiritual bread is more important, much more important. First, you should make the effort to receive spiritual nourishment. Insist on it. That is the gateway through which all earthly problems will be solved, and not the other way around. Whoever yearns for the spiritual bread has already reached a certain level on his path. Forgive us our trespasses. Well, my dear ones, the prayer says, forgive us, not me alone. This includes all human beings, even those who have hurt you and whom you may not be able to forgive completely. If you really wish that God may forgive them, then you are liberated from a dark spiritual form which attracts to you harmful energies and dark influences. Think what these words contain. God should not forgive only you and those whom you like, but also those for whom you still may harbor negative feelings. And often you are not even clear about your own guilt. For man tends to produce false, unhealthy, exaggerated guilt feelings where they are not justified. This inner process works in the following way. Man shies away from admitting his guilt where it is justified and where he could feel a healthy, constructive repentance, which would never drag him down or discourage him. When he asks God for forgiveness with this healthy repentance and really wants to change, he will feel that he is forgiven and liberated and will know that a burden has been lifted from his shoulders. This happens when the will to change and to carry the good intention through is meant sincerely. But often, man will not face the real guilt, partly because in his conceit he wants to see himself better than he is, and partly because it takes too great an effort to bring about inner change. Deep inside, he knows that this cannot happen from one day to the other without much effort. Thus, since the spiritual core gives out signals, spurring him on to recognize his guilt, but at the same time his lower self with its pride and laziness interferes, man often assumes a false guilt about something he obviously can't influence. It is as if he said, "See, I am guilty. I admit it. But what can I do? Actually, I'm not really guilty here." Naturally, these are unconscious processes, and they have to be brought up and out into the daylight. This is the difference between the so-called guilt complexes and real guilt, real repentance. The experience of all people who walk such a spiritual path has always been that whoever recognizes his real guilt loses automatically not only all false guilt complexes which pull him down, but feels instantly relieved and at peace, because truth always brings about such a feeling. To open oneself wide and be willing to overcome the resistance is a struggle. As a first reaction, man will be afraid to admit his real guilt, and therefore he will rather produce in his unconscious all kinds of unreal guilt feelings, which either don't really apply or which cover up faults which he does not want to see because he is not yet ready to accept his momentary imperfection as it actually is. Guilt complexes are unreal and therefore never lead to liberation. They create a vicious circle. They lead to heaviness, sadness, whereas truth always liberates, no matter how unpleasant it may feel at first. Examine your own self in this respect. Only he who penetrates all the layers of appearance of delusion will reach the real guilt. He will find in what way he has violated one or more spiritual laws in action or in thought. Only then is it possible to ask God for forgiveness, which includes the request to help you and show you how to change. Only he who is thus liberated within can forgive others totally. You cannot expect forgiveness if you are not completely ready to forgive others. And whosoever has experienced, comprehended, and felt God's forgiveness should also be able to forgive himself. And this leads to the next line. As we forgive those who trespass against us. How many people say this prayer, yet they don't have the slightest intention to truly forgive? Here, too, there is often self-deception. While there may be no hate left, there is still resentment. If you haven't liberated yourself from that, you cannot be free enough to have deeply illuminating spiritual experiences. But it is so difficult for you to achieve this complete forgiveness because you lack the understanding of the other person. Therefore, ask for this understanding. Ask for the insight you lack in this respect. If you really want it, and don't wallow in your resentments as you so often do, then all this will be given to you. You human beings don't want to understand that of yourselves you cannot do anything. You need help. Pray, therefore, also for this help. This is why this sentence is part of the prayer. For if it were possible to do it with your will alone, you wouldn't need to pray for it. You don't pray that you should be able to move from one spot to another. If you have healthy limbs, you can do it at will. But you need help in order to be able to really forgive. And you do need help to face yourself in total honesty and know yourself without your mask. And you need help to meet your resistances and to accomplish the inner change. So this too has to be confronted. Do I truly forgive from the bottom of my heart all human beings? Then when you see clearly that you cannot yet do this quite alone, you can ask for help. And understand that not forgiving burdens you, makes you unhappy, blocks the light and freedom that you so ardently desire. It harms you much more than those whom you cannot forgive. Lead us in our temptations. Of course, what is usually said is, lead us not into temptation. And this has implications which can cause confusion and can do harm because God does not lead man into temptation. The real meaning of these words is that you pray that God may lead you when you are in temptation. Lead you that you can resist it, that you have the strength and the vision to be victorious. If this is what you visualize, then you can also say, lead us not into temptation. The words do not matter that much if they do not confuse the concepts. that what is temptation? Again, it is within you. It does not come from the outside. And even if it came from the outside, you would not yield to it if there were not something in you that is receptive to it. For instance, could you be tempted to commit murder? Certainly not. But you can be tempted to give in to your faults, whatever these may be. Therefore, it is important that you realize that you can be tempted, and in what way? You have to know your faults. List all your faults so that you can remember them. And then ask again for the strength and the help for you. Cannot do it alone to overcome these faults. Only therein lies temptation. No devil, no Satan could get at you if you do not have something in you that responds. And when you pray for God, and when you pray that God keeps Satan away from you, you are in such an error. For in you, in your lower self, in the crust that envelops your perfect self, lies the germ through which you can be led into temptation. The dark forces serve as instruments to draw it out, to bring it into your awareness so you can fight it. Otherwise, this germ of evil would lie dormant. It would have no opportunity to manifest, and thus you would not come one step nearer to perfection, to true bliss. But deliver us from evil. Here, too, the same thing applies. The evil is in you. If it existed only outside, it couldn't touch you. You need to put this thought into your prayer. Ask Christ to help you to overcome temptation so that you can deliver yourself from evil. Only you yourself can do it with the help of God, with the help of Christ, which he has also promised you. Try it with him. Don't try to do it alone. You are too weak. You need the willpower. You need unceasing effort. But this is just as insufficient as it is impossible that God, Christ, or any spirit can deliver you from evil if you do not have the will to free yourself. That is, you need both. Try to understand deeply the meaning of this, tackling it from both sides, through your work and by asking again and again for the spiritual help. For thine is the kingdom of God is within you. It should belong to God and to no one else. The power. Only God's power cleanses, delivers, and illuminates the truth. It makes you capable of love, of understanding. It leads you to happiness and raises you up from all the darkness and imperfection that has burdened you through so many lifetimes, and brings you to the glory, which you can attain only in this way. I could say many more things about this most beautiful of all prayers, which contains everything, yes, everything that you need for your life. But there is not enough time in this hour. I have given you a few clues, and it would be good if every one of you hears or reads these words would think about them in this his quiet hour. Perhaps you will then receive further thoughts and feelings about how to apply them very personally in your own life. This, then, is living prayer, when the meaning of each word expands as the interpretations become clearer to you, and you see how you already apply the essence of this prayer in certain areas of your life and not yet in others. If you try to live in this way, you must become happy, my dear ones, and eventually all problems will disappear. True, they are there first, but they are the necessary medicine. But you will increasingly gain mastery of yourself and consequently also mastery over life instead of being mastered by life. I say to you, ask the question, how happy am I? You may be certain that to the degree you are happy, you can also make another one or several human beings happy. And also know that to the degree that you lack happiness, you cannot yet make others as happy as one day you will if you continue to follow this upward path. Self-examination about your own happiness is a simple little yardstick or barometer in which you can measure how much happiness you are able to give. And if you are filled with the desire to make others happy, then God will also provide the opportunity, and this is the way in which you will be blessed with true happiness.
And now, my dear ones, I am ready for your questions. Question: is it all right for a medium to make a living through her task? There are different views about this. Although it is clear that a medium has to earn a living just as any other person, and if it were done in any other way, she might not have enough time to fulfill her task, which is often a very important one, yet various spiritual sources claim that this should not happen. So there is a problem here. What can you tell us about this? Answer. This is what I have to say. If every medium who is still in training knew that he or she could make a living also through this task, that is, if such a person counted right from the beginning on this, there would be even more nonsense and misuse of this gift than there already is. The temptation, even for a decent person, full of goodwill, would be too great. Therefore, God's spirits are very cautious around the subject, and it is usually good for a human being to approach this task, thinking that in no way would it lead to personal gain. But I will add this. A medium should have given his or her service for free for at least 3 to 5 years before beginning to make a living through this task. During the years of training, God's spirit world has an opportunity to observe whether the person is really fit for this task. If not, God's spirits will withdraw anyhow. After all, money is only one of the many obstacles that can cause people to fail. When, however, a person turns out to be capable of fulfilling such a task, money will no longer be a hindrance. It will not influence the person to taint the work. So at least 3 to 5 years should first pass. And when everything is right, when the spirit world does not withdraw, then guidance will come from the outside, and there will be signs to indicate that the time has come to accept money. It will be just as it was at an earlier stage, when the guidance suggested that the medium can now channel also for other people to help them. This took time, too, depending on the person's progress. Various green lights are given in the course of training. Of course, some people don't need to earn a living through mediumship because they have enough without it. If not, God's world will see to it that the person in training has sufficient means to live. In principle, to claim that a medium should not be rewarded by earning a living with his or her channeling is, of course, quite unjustified. After having invested in her profession just as much time, effort, and energy as any other professional person, and often even more. Equally unjustified would be to imply that simply because a medium accepts money, the contact would not be with God's spirits, that she must be a fraud. If you are looking for an argument to disbelieve, you will always find one. You would find someone else if the medium did not accept any money. After all, even when not being paid, a medium can have contact with spirits who are in no way connected to God's spirit world. Ego, power, vanity, pride, craving for admiration can be just as great a hindrance. So you see, the matter is not that simple. The truth will become obvious during the training period, and when everything is right, monetary compensation will be forthcoming without asking for it. The training period of 3 to 5 years, however, doesn't only mean developing the capacity to channel, but most of all, concentrating on walking the spiritual path of development in the sense I am teaching it. If this is the case, then the contact will always be under divine protection, regardless of external circumstances. Of course, a medium should not refuse help to someone who is poor and cannot afford to pay. But it wouldn't be right for someone who is willing to spend money on other things, and often on much less important things, to expect the medium to give her time and service for free, unless the medium is still in training. If, all through this time, a medium is working on the path of self-development, then neither material self-interests nor vanity or any other obstacle will stand in the way. Of course, no one can evaluate the situation from the outside, unless he or she knows the medium very well. But the medium herself and God will know the truth, and that is what counts. A medium who pursues this kind of training goes through a learning period very similar to a doctor or teacher who attends a university for years. A physician treats patients also without being paid, for instance, in a hospital while still in training, until he or she has reached the expertise that enables him to earn a decent living as a physician. Then when he has earned his degree, he can be an honest, conscientious, and good doctor, even though he earns money with it. If a medium is really capable of giving help, it would be absurd to devote her time and energy to a profession for which she is not trained, with which she could not be helpful, and which would prevent her from fulfilling the task she is best prepared for. It would be as if an excellently trained physician pursued medicine only as a sideline, not being supposed to earn a living that way, and therefore would have to take a different kind of job just to earn his bread. Any prospective medium should, therefore, be prepared to work for quite a long time without being paid. God's world will give help and guidance so that meanwhile the person will be provided with what is necessary. And when the time comes, God's world will help again by slowly withdrawing from the medium the occupation that was necessary until then. All those who avail themselves of the medium's help, time, and effort should, as a matter of course, wish to enable the medium to earn her living, everyone according to their means. This would be beneficial for them, too, in every respect. Something must be wrong with your own thinking if you raise doubts about the medium just because of this, and then you should examine yourself and rethink your conclusion. So once more, the training period should take at least 3 to 5 years, in some cases even longer. It depends entirely on the intensity and diligence with which the medium pursues his or her spiritual development. When the time is right, then, as I said, outside events will make it clear that a further green light has been given. Do you understand, my friend? And the response was yes, completely. Question. You said in today's lecture that when something weighs heavily on one's chest, we should ask ourselves, what in us is wrong? But the heaviness may come also, for instance, from grief. Answer. That is possible. But the question is, what kind of grief? Healthy sorrow does not feel like a heavy burden. On the contrary, it lifts you up. It loosens you. I could almost say that despite the grief, something quite wonderful takes place deep inside. It is almost impossible to describe feelings in words. Ever so, just try to understand and feel into what I mean. Sense the difference between the tightness of bitterness and the sorrow that loosens the soul. And there was a response, I understand exactly what you mean. My dear ones, receive God's blessings through my hands, through the hands of the medium. This energy wants to penetrate into you to strengthen you and lift you up. God's blessing reaches all of my friends, near and far. Be in God.